Welcome back to Classical Guitar Insider. This is your host, Brett Williams. I hope everyone's doing good today. I'm doing fine. Everything's pretty good. We got Wally, my baby Wally. He's getting older now. He's able to pull himself up in his crib and stand. We got a great video of it. Or Liz did. It was a special moment. It's like, you know, it's like it's this weekend. And he's talking. He's not saying anything, but he's trying to talk. He's trying to communicate. The way we could tell he was standing up on his crib was that there were bite marks at the top of the crib that we found. So he had been chewing his two little teeth in the little part of his bottom mouth, and he's been crawling up there and chewing on the crib, on the wood. We noticed it, and it tracked. It looked like the way his mouth would do damage to the crib. And so the next day, we saw him trying to do it, and he did it, and he was real proud that we saw him. So he's doing great. He's moved into the next level at daycare. We're lucky to have daycare. It's very expensive. Liz's dad is helping us with that. It's the only way we can do it, this godforsaken community of New York City we live in. This place, I mean, everybody's going to have to leave. It's, you know, no one can afford that rent. I've already talked about it. We're not going to talk about that. We're going to focus on some good things today. I've got big life news, if you're interested in me, which, you know, a couple of you are. But, of course, we've got Julian Tarzaban is going to be on the show. He is the face of the brand of Sick Ass Guitars in Germany. They're probably the biggest retailer of guitars in Europe right now. and sorry, you know, it's spring and winter's ending, so my nose is a constant evolving entity. But he's a great guy. I wanted to have him on the show because I had been I started shopping for guitars again. I've been offline for a lot of reasons. One is an apartment search that is going nowhere. And the other is I was shopping for a guitar because I knew that, not really shopping for a guitar, but I just was in Philadelphia. And you know, you never go to Philadelphia, even though I did. Go to savageclassical.com. That's savageclassical.com, SAVAGE classical.com. And Richard Sage will hook you up with the guitar of your dreams. You tell him Brett sent you. He's our longest time sponsor. You should always go to Savage first, way before you go to Sick Ass, way before you go to GSI, way before you go to San Francisco, whatever it is, Guitar Solo. I used to know that place. It used to be my place. I'm from the Bay Area. But I went to Philadelphia, and I stopped by the guitar store there and talked to Nicole, who is an Austrian and a luthier herself. I just thought I'd play some guitars. You know, I've been in Philadelphia like 10 or 12 times in my life. That's stretching it. 10 max. Maybe not even that. More like 5. When I was a kid, I was a serial embellisher. I think my mom caught me telling the other kids that I had that G.I. Joe aircraft carrier. Well, that thing's like the size of a children's, I think it's like 20 feet long. And I was telling everybody that I had it, but it was at my grandma's house. And that's when my mom knew I had a problem. And that's when she expressed it to me. And I was like, you know what, maybe I should tone it down a little bit and at least not lie about what I have. So anyway, let's say I've been to Philadelphia 5 times. Okay. I think that's fair. That's enough times to have visited the guitar store, and I never did. And I visited it, and it's very nice. It's no savageclassical.com. Go to Richard Sage and tell him Brett sent you. But it is a great guitar store, and Bill's there. And I had, you know, I talked to Bill a couple of times in the past, and he's a nice guy, but I really hit it off with Nicole and me. And Nicole spent hours playing guitars. I played a Ruck. Delarue. But the one I really kind of fell in love, other than this one, the one that I got, that's right, I did get a guitar for the first time in 20 years. I really liked this young guy called, what is his name? Okay, now I can't remember. Wait, I've got it here. Anyway, Sean Sperling. That's it. Sean Sperling, a maker out of California who I guess moved back to the East Coast. He had a cedar, and I thought, oh, you know, I've always played a spruce. It'd be nice to switch gears in the twilight of my whatever this is. It's not the I'm well past the twilight of my youth. I'm into sort of like things are going to stop working. So time to start trying cedar and heroin. But so I was maybe going to switch gears there, but you know, I was trying all sorts of things like the porters and the things with the sound ports, all sorts. I was going all over the place. Old guitars, new guitars, just thinking outside of my budget. And I ended up getting outside of my budget. And I ended up with a Walter Verreit, who is a maker in Belgium. And it's just one of those things where I played everything and I went in and it made sense to me the way this guitar worked, the way the sound was presented. It is a spruce and it is like a 1937 Hauser model, so it's uber traditional. No Lattice bracing on any part of it. It's got just a Brazilian on the back and the sides, and you know, it's a guitar. And it was expensive as shit for me, but I got it, and boy am I happy. Wow, you know, it's kind of like the baby. It's like I did not want one until I had one, and then now that I have one, I can't imagine why I didn't do it earlier. I'm able to play easier, and it's not the loudest guitar in the world because it is like a traditional model, so it's, you know, it's not like this big boomy thing. But you know, me and Julian talk about like what because he also likes Verreit, and I, you know, he's not too popular over here, so it's not like I'm going to be able to like turn this thing around or anything. It's not like a Connor or something where everybody's playing, but it's it had a very, not a unique sound, but a sound that I think was distinctive from all the other guitars that were there. Even the Ruck had this big, you know, this is not that way. This is more, anyway, I'll leave it for the interview because we talk about what I heard in it. And this is not to talk shit on the Sperlings or the louder guitars, the guitars that are designed to project, even though that's, to me, that's a little questionable. At least sound very loud within the space that you are in, which is like a, you know, a Red Gate or something like that, right? A Smallman. You know, so I went and I played it, and then I left and went back to New York, talked to the bank, because I didn't want Liz to get involved in this. And I knew I had to do it. It's sort of like when I met Liz, I knew something was up. I knew that like I liked her a lot. I knew that I could love her. I do love her now. Don't worry. And I knew that if I was going to blow a bunch of money on a 4K TV, it had better be now instead of after I was with her and she could scrutinize my purchases. So I ended up getting like a LG CX, hooked the old Xbox up to it. Things are, I love it so much. If anybody ever did anything to it, I would never forgive them. Anyway, I kind of felt the same way about getting the guitar now, because with the expenses that are piling up with this baby, I felt very unjustified. I was like, it's just going to get worse. And also, like, we were spending tons of money. We're moving all this stuff, and it's like thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars over the course of several months is now just getting spewed into the universe. And that is the word I chose. I felt like I gotta get this now, because if I don't, it's no longer about me being able to justify. I cannot justify guitars over, you know, for that amount of money. I'm not gonna tell you exactly what I spent on it because that's inappropriate. I'm sure Savage Classical, in their defense, Savage Classical didn't carry the right, I don't think, but I didn't really check that much. I just kind of went like, this is the guitar I like. I owe it to myself I'm going to get, I checked, of course I checked with Liz. Liz was like 100% behind it. You know, I offered to help. I just was like, no, I'm going to, you know, do this. I'm going to figure it out. And I got it. And, yeah, it was great. What was I saying? Anyway, so I wanted to get something before all those expenses piled up. So I went home to make sure it was okay. And then I, you know, with the bank, with, you know, talk it over, think it over. I went back to play it in Philadelphia on a Wednesday after being in Philly. We went to Philadelphia, by the way, just to get out of the city, to get to another city, because it was like our options were to go upstate or to go to the beach. In both those places in March, in you know, New York are haunted at that point. So we just went to another city and got like a real nice hotel room, and it was nice because that's all we had. You were stuck in the hotel room with the baby. And so I went and I tried a guitar, did it. Then we left, right? Come back after the weekend, I come back Wednesday. I play the Verite, I play Sterling, play a couple other guitars again. I hate the Verite now, right? The second time I go in, I'm like, this is what am I thinking? Like, it's expensive. It's, you know, it's not doing, it's, I'm not there. I couldn't, you know, the other guitars all seemed like loud, big, boom. And, you know, I was like, oh yeah. And then I went through and I played for a while. And then I got, I felt myself getting a little fatigued. And at that point I played everything again. And then the Verite blossomed. And I felt like I could play it forever. And the other ones I was already kind of tired of. So I thought that that was the sign, and I took it. All right? That's the way I bought a guitar. That's my story. Is it interesting? I think it is. I think it is. I think it was, I do not spend money. I don't like doing it. I don't think it's fun, you know? Yeah, I got a TV. I told you guys about that, right? All right, that was 4 years ago. But I don't like taking big vacations. I don't like it. So that's it. I'm very excited. It is, as my friend Paul Smith said, and again, this is not to talk crap on the bigger sounding guitars. It's just, I don't see myself playing in large areas. I just see myself recording and playing. And I felt like this, even in a larger area, I feel like the sound of the note is presented in its purest form is going to get further with this guitar. Does that make sense? In other words, I feel like the big guitars, they're big, boom, boom, boom. But I feel like the clarity of the note, the intention of the note is going to get further into the audience with a more traditional setup. That's what I was finding. That's my overall conclusion. Am I wrong? Probably. I'm certainly no expert on these things, but you know, I've been around long enough to know what I like. And I like this thing. Got its first dent in my goddamn refrigerator the other day. It's a tiny dent. It's barely noticeable. It took me 3 days to find, but I found it, and I can see it in my mind's eye for the rest of my life. It's very small. And if I'm reselling it, don't ever tell that to anybody. Anyway, let's get on with the show. This is my time with Julian Terzaban. In Philadelphia, I bought a guitar maker that you like too, Walter Verite.
Walter.
Oh.
Yeah, actually, it's very funny because before I joined this meeting, I was editing a video with a Walter Verite guitar. So an artist was playing on it and I was editing the video. I finished that and now I'm talking to you. Yeah, I love his guitars. I think he has different guitar models and yeah, I love his own model. It's a lattice braced guitar and he is also a very lovely guy. I mean, I met him in Antwerp where he's living and yeah, I mean, he's also teaching. He has a lot of guitar luthiery students, and many of them are also great guitar luthiers.
Yeah, you got, and my head started spinning because I worked with one of his students, Nicole, who's out here, and she sent me some. She goes, "Oh, you know, you should check out," because I just happened to play it, and I was like, "This is a special guitar. I think this is great. This is exactly what I'm looking for." It's a traditional. It's the Hauser model of his, but it's so it's not Lattice braced. And then I got in my head. I was like, "Shit, do I want a Lattice braced guitar?" Because you were saying how much you were like, "These are my favorites," and I was like, "Well, this guy says this is his favorite." Now I can't stop thinking. I couldn't. I lost sleep over it, and I'm like, so I called Walter, and I was like, "What do you think about this particular one?" And he said that was you know, I'd made a couple of those and I really liked that one. I went back and I played it again. I liked it. But yeah, it was I guess that's sort of why one of the reasons I contacted you is I was just thinking, you know, when I never buy guitars and you know, when people buy guitars now, they see your face a lot, especially if they're gonna, you know, spend the kind of money we're talking about. You know, sick ass guitars is sort of has become sort of probably the place that's making the most amount of videos, that's got the most amount of social media streams, that's working with some of the biggest artists that are coming out now. You know, you guys are working with a lot of younger people who are just not starting their careers, but like early mid-level in some cases, a lot of Anna Vidovic. And it's the impact that you guys are currently having can't be overstated. It seems like it's international and it's big and it's really having an impact not just on guitar sales but on sort of bringing the classical guitar, I would say, to sort of a wider audience. And you're the face of that. How did that happen? Because I know that you're not you're you're a pop. Your background is more pop guitar, right? And that's like what you went to college for. It's what you studied. How did you end up becoming sort of the face of selling high-end classical guitars to concert musicians?
Actually, I have to mention that I'm not working in the sales department. A lot of people think I'm selling the guitars. The only thing what I do is to test the guitars, to make a presentation video of the guitars, and I just say my honest opinion about the sound, and then the other guys from the sales department, sell the guitars. A lot of content that we are creating is just, a lot of them are just for fun. We have an idea and we take the camera and we shoot a video and we just upload it on YouTube and suddenly we see a lot of views. And I don't want to say that we don't take it seriously, but we are very open to try things out. And so how I got to Zikas is also interesting. So my father was a guitar teacher, and when I was still living in Iran, I was playing guitar, and it was, as you said, more popular music. I was playing acoustic guitar and I was singing, and but then I started to play flamenco because it's a very popular music style in Iran. It's very similar to the Spanish music. And yeah, so I played for a few years flamenco, and then I moved to Germany when I was 15. And then I got some classical guitar lessons in the music school. And then actually I studied classical guitar in Germany in Detmold with
Thomas
Gerhard
Kirchhoff, yeah,
Klavenek
the
and Thomas
Amadeus
Kirchhoff.
duo, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, but before I studied classical guitar, I studied sound engineering in Germany. And at some point, one of the Zika's CEOs called my teacher Thomas Kirchhoff and asked, "Hey, do you know someone who can play classical guitar and also know how to record classical guitar?" And he said, "Yeah, I have a student. He studied sound engineering and now he is studying classical guitar, and he could be the guy that you are looking for." And then, yeah, I got in touch with Zikas, and yeah, I was here. I was very impressed by the atmosphere and how it works here and very open-minded CEOs, and I love the atmosphere. And then, yeah, I started to work here. But first of all, so I should actually record the artists, invite and record the artists who you see on the Zikas Guitars channel. And at some point, we also wanted to create different content, not only music. And then, yeah, I had the idea to do this weekly guitar meetings. So, because we publish every week on our website, I think 5 to 6 new guitars. And we thought it could be a very good, it would be very helpful for the people who don't have the chance to come to Zikas and to try the guitars if they watch a video where someone is presenting, showcasing the guitar and talking about the guitar. And yeah, that's how, yeah, how
Well,
I
that, I mean, that
came
makes a lot of
to.
sense, this background, because when I was recently playing guitars, I was not in the market for a guitar. I don't think I've even really been in the market for over a decade. So I just had no interest in buying one. And it just was time. It was time for me to get a new one, with what just where I'm at career-wise right now. And I think 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, when I was really, really sort of looking and playing a lot of guitars, I don't know if I had a clear idea, but after doing the podcast now for 13 years, and after recording myself, my last two albums, doing it all myself, mixing, mastering, all that stuff, coming and listening to guitars after that experience, I felt really kind of gave me a leg up in understanding what I was looking for sonically in a way that was more mature than it was before. Before, I would just maybe play a red gate and go, that's the loudest, that's the best. And now I'm like we were talking about Walter Verite, that is not the kind of guitar that this is. It's a much different experience. And I think that I, at least just from an audio engineering perspective, was able to listen to things and hear things that are important in a recording. And especially when you do start recording yourself and you do start doing that, you listen to other people and you go like, what makes that Assad recording really pop? What is it about that? Is it the mics? Is it the guitars? And I think we look for different things. So when we watch the videos, I don't think that most people are going to be I don't think people should be under the assumption that the recording quality is going to be so good that it's going to give you a really clear idea of whether it's the right guitar for you or not. What they're looking at, and what I'm looking at, is your reaction to the instrument. And I think we're looking at it, from my perspective and knowing, learning a little bit more about you. We want to hear what an audio engineer has to say about a guitar. And that's kind of at least that's the lens through which I think you're seeing it, right? Is all that experience with pop and all that stuff. That's one thing. Obviously, the time with Thomas makes you a classical guitarist by any metric. But yeah, I mean, just your how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, so
I mean, it's not a good question. But the idea is, yeah.
it's actually a very interesting question because, as you said, when I try guitars, so I'm hearing at the sound, also not only as a musician and as a guitar player, but also as a sound engineer. So some characteristics or qualities of a guitar, like sustain, dynamic range, and bright sound, smooth, dark, all these different characteristics. I learned all of this when I was studying sound engineering and not when I was studying classical guitar,
Bingo.
because of course, if you are studying classical guitar, you are talking about the music, of course, also about the sound, but you don't talk very detailed about the sound, like in a sound engineering university. It's a different conversation that you have there, and so that's why I can. So I think that's why I can. I'm able to find out if a guitar is good or not. And
Exactly.
yeah, I mean, at the beginning when I was when I started at Zikas, it wasn't that much easy. But I was thinking how many guitars I'm playing. So we publish every week five, six new guitars, and it means in a year it's nearly 250 or 300 different guitars that I'm playing. And at some point I just play a chord and I know if it's a very well-balanced guitar, loud, if it has enough dynamic range, and I can hear it straight with the first chord. And so the studying as a sound engineering and classical guitarist, if I combine this both this both topics or subjects or studies,
It
it's
works.
helped me. It works.
It works, and I think that that sort of is the thing. Let's talk about that real quick, because we are talking to an audience of classical guitarists. We're talking to an audience that is probably very familiar with your work, with the work of Sickass, and yeah, I can understand going into it, as an audio engineer. What when you talk about balance? And in hearing it with one chord, that is different, because I think most people pick up a guitar when they're trying it, and they might see you play, and they might go like, okay, this guy's playing five jazz chords, then he plays "Fly Me to the Moon," then he plays Schubert, right? Is that right? So that and it's the same for every guitar, which I think is great. That's very important, is that you're performing the same music. You perform beautifully, by the way. The Schubert's really, really, yeah, beautifully performed. Which I'd like to talk about whether you're performing or not at some point, but going into that, what are you looking for? Can you put it into words? If you were actually discussing this at a university that was involved with sound production, like you did Deutsche Pop, is that the name of the place you went to, or? Yeah,
Exactly.
so if you were there and you were discussing it, because I think post for me and for a lot of people, I think post pandemic, a lot more people have experience with recording software, with recording engineering. A lot of people recorded themselves during that time, or at least learned how to. And what do you can you kind of put into words what you're looking for? I mean, balance is obviously a big one. We all want that. But yeah,
Yeah,
what are some of the primary things that you're looking for? I'm sure you've had this discussion before.
So I mean, for different people, balance can have a different meaning. Also, as dark or bright sound, some people have a di different idea from a dark sound. Or bright sound.
Yeah, it's like wine. Wine's the same way with me. Somebody will say, "Oh, that's a very dry wine." And I'll be like, "This tastes like grapefruit. What are you talking about?" Or grape. So anyway, go ahead.
Actually, for me, balance is when I play just a minor chord, I want to hear all the tones at the same loudness. And this is simply for me a very well balanced sound, because with a lot of not with a lot of but with some guitars you play a chord and you hear somehow suddenly that that second string is louder than the first, or the first string is louder on the or the E string is louder, and it doesn't give me a comfortable feeling when I'm playing. But when I play a chord and I hear every tone at the same loudness and also the same if they have the same amount of overtones. For me, this guitar is well balanced. And the other meaning of the balance could be, or for many people, maybe it's the meaning of the balance. For example, if you play from the first string a scale and you go up to the sixth string, if the tones also have the same loudness, and if there are not suddenly some tones that are louder than the others, or they have more overtone than the other tones, this is also a good balance. It's a well-balanced guitar. So this is why what I understand when I'm talking about the balance of a guitar.
Yeah, you're looking for a balance between every note, without any preference. And in some guitarists, like you said, there is a subjectivity to that, because some guitarists would want the first string to be a little bit, so they don't have to work as hard, with a melody to bring it out. Maybe it'd be kind of nice if that higher end was popped a little more.
Exactly. Actually, I love that. I like if the first string is a bit louder than the others, because usually you are playing the melody on the first string in most of the cases.
Right.
And if the first string is not louder than the others a little bit, then you might struggle a bit. So,
right.
But yeah. So.
Or a lot of these loud sort of louder guitars, like a Cedar guitar in some cases, stuff like that, has this element of having really sort of like forward, low end sound that sort of informs the sound of the higher end. It almost like bleeds into it. But yeah, I think that that's sort of what a mature ear is looking for, is more balance, more clarity. Very important. I don't know. One of the things I kind of find too is, in this last foray into guitar shopping was I noticed one thing. I was kind of going into it going for something that was a little louder. I've never had played a Cedar. I've always played a Spruce. And so I wanted to maybe get a Cedar and kind of go that just route. I'm 47. I wanted to try it, And I think what I was finding, and what Nicole and I were saying about this guitar and some of the other guitars, is some of them were louder. Some of them were even maybe subjectively richer sounding. But I kind of noticed that the properties that I looked for in a note were actually very much louder than the overall loudness of some of the other sort of bigger Smallman style, Australian model, which I'm not saying those are bad. Those are great. It's a fun concert, but I think that what we're looking for in the note that is either sort of brought up front before all of the overtones are, or it's sort of it's still back there, but the overtones come at you first. Is that fair to say, or am I just sort of talking witchcraft now? In other words, there are elements to a note that come out quicker with maybe a quieter guitar, and with louder guitars, they don't necessarily, they're louder, but the part of the guitar that I'm looking for is not necessarily louder. It's just there's other stuff moving,
I know exactly what you mean. this is also something that I struggle sometimes to talk about or to describe when I'm doing the weekly guitar meeting. That's why I sometimes say, maybe you can help me to describe the sound. Because as you said, some guitars, if you play the tones, it sounds weird, but somehow you hear, first of all, more overtones and more room. Yeah. And then the core of the tone is coming out. And I think some of the double top guitars have this this character, and also with some double top guitars, you don't have the core anymore. It's only overtones, and
that's it. Yeah, that's exactly what I noticed. And that's sort of something that, you know, if you asked a 28-year-old version of me, I'd be like, no, that sounds better. It sounds warmer. It sounds more oaky. It sounds more, you know, almost there's like a, you know, it's a chamber in your lap. With these other guitars, it's still going to depend on the acoustics of a room. You're not going to be able to take it to a carpeted library, which is where most of us end up playing and have it really sing in the same way that you would, like you said, with double top guitars, all those other things that depend on the sort of membrane moving very quickly, as opposed to a harder traditional top that works almost like a steel string does, where the sound just pops out of the sound hole very quickly. But at least you know where you stand, you know. It's a little bit like liquor versus beer, you know. You know, it's just like, give me the juice. That's interesting. So that's something that I think that's something that I look for, or at least I discovered that I look for. When we talk, we're sort of focusing on the, you know, the element, and I know this is sort of this is a very subjective conversation, right? I think that we could talk to a dozen audio engineers and they would, maybe we would all disagree with, you know, each other. And I don't consider myself an audio engineer by any means. But when we are talking about that note, you know, that you hear, that at least you and I are agreeing, we want to hear that note. We don't want it to get lost in a world of overtone. Is there some sort of metric that you can apply to that from sort of an engineering perspective? What would you call that element of the presentation of the note? It's the opposite of an overtone, essentially, right?
Yeah, exactly. I just know which guitars usually have that kind of tone. Usually, if the guitars have double back and sides, the guitar has more projection, so the sound is going like forward, and you have, of course, a lot of overtones, but you have also still that core in the sound.
So that's it. You're talking about a double, not a double top, but a double back and sides.
Double back and sides.
Yeah, I don't know enough to even know that that's a thing, but that's a thing, huh?
Yeah, I mean, usually if I hear the guitars with double sides, I hear also a lot of core in the sound. But I don't know how to find out or how to describe what that core is or where is it coming from. I mean, I can hear that and you can also feel it, but and as I said, I usually see it or hear it on guitars with double sides, and double back is very rare, but most of the times double sides.
Double sides. Okay, yeah. So this is, I mean, it's just, what do you think? Go ahead.
Yeah, also the Daniel Friedrich guitars. Mm-hmm. Daniel Friedrich has built always double sides, and that's why guitars, if you hear the Friedrich guitar in a concert, big concert house, you can hear every tone, even if you are sitting very far away from the stage. Mm-hmm. And actually, you don't have that with doubled up guitars, to be honest. Mm. And so you have the core in the sound, and the newer models of the Daniel Friedrich guitars, they have double sides.
That's cool. I didn't know that, but that does make a lot of sense. Whereas he's keeping the integrity of the tone that the top of the guitar gives it, and then what would normally be taken on by the double top is taken on by the double sides, as far as projection is concerned.
Yeah.
That's an interesting. It's crazy. It's the engineering that goes into these things. I mean, it's insane. As far as like sound ports go, what are your feelings about those? I mean, obviously I've heard guitars where they're very effective, and I've heard guitars where they're very gimmicky, you know, but what's right now, there's always every, you know, when I was a student in the late 90s, and at that point it was all about Humphrey. It was all, you know, Humphrey was everywhere in the U.S. The Holzman brothers were playing Humphreys. All their students were playing Humphreys. The Assads, I think, were playing Humphreys. Everybody's playing a Humphrey. And that sort of defined that era in a lot of ways, sort of on the, you know, on a little bit on the coattails of the Smallman stuff that was happening with John Williams. And, you know, so it's these big sounding, very playable guitars, you know, and then we have sound ports as sort of being something that happened, I think, a little bit after that, maybe during, but without even, we can talk a little bit about sound ports. I'm sort of switching gears with what my question was. But what do you think right now is happening? What do you see as being something that is indicative of the time we're in with guitar makers? You know, like I said, maybe sound ports in the mid early 2000s, Humphreys in the 90s. You know, what do you think? And I'm coming at it from a very limited set of knowledge. I intentionally limit my knowledge so that I don't go around buying guitars all day. But I mean, where are we?
So you mean the sound port on the side of the guitar, right?
Yeah, the one that faces up towards the my head, my face.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the really avant-garde ones, but yeah.
With some guitars, it's really too loud. It's like, oh, I have to take a step back. And but anyway, so actually the way I see what a sound port does, this is actually if you are playing chamber music with other musicians, guitar is actually one of the most quiet instruments, and so you have either you have to amplify the guitar or the other instruments have to take care and play more piano and quiet, and the sound port just helps you to hear yourself better.
It's a monitor. Like it's a studio monitor. Right.
Exactly. So this is the function for me, the function of a sound port. And of course, if you are sitting in front of a guitar with a sound port, sometimes, you know, we test it. We close the sound port and then we play a chord and then we open the sound port again. So it does make a difference also from the other side. It's a bit just louder, or I think also the room is filled with more sound if the guitar has a sound port. But there is not a huge difference. I think the main function is just a monitor. It's a monitor.
Yeah.
And I see it here at Zika's with some guitars, but actually most of the guitars now, they don't have a sound port.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a new thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly why. Maybe this is, I mean, a lot of guitar luthiers, they try to stick to the tradition of a guitar, of guitar making, of this guitar making history and Spanish guitar making. And so from the, let's say, so if you, for example, do you know Andrea Tacchi?
Yes.
So he's one of the most well-known classical guitar luthiers from Italy. And he pays a lot of attention to details, and he sticks to the tradition of guitar making, but he still tries to do some things different to create a modern guitar with some traditional elements. And he had on his guitars a few years ago also two sound ports. And at some point he stopped that. And for him, the reason was just he doesn't like the look of the guitar, the two holes. So for many guitar luthiers, it's just a matter of how the guitar looks at the end. And as I said, since it doesn't make a huge difference,
It's becoming less popular now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's definitely still there. I mean, people are doing it. Nobody, I think it's exciting if you're a luthier, you want to innovate. You want to try stuff, right? You don't want to just, you know, become a manufacturer of, you know, the Stradivarius model of the guitar, right? Mm-hmm. Which is sort of where violins are stuck forever.
Yeah,
you know, actually, they're stuck forever. They'll never ever do anything different ever.
Absolutely. Actually, I had an interview with Italian guitar luthier Daniele Chiesa. He has built, he was building traditional guitars for years, and now he wants to. So he tried to build a double top guitar, and I had an interview with him, and he said, actually, he didn't like double top guitars. But okay. Now he has built three double top guitars after 30 years of guitar making. And he said, first you have to know the rules, how a traditional guitar is being built, and make a very good traditional guitar. And you have to know exactly what you are doing and build a copy of your own guitar, and if you are able to do it 20, 30 times to build the exact copy of your guitar with similar sound, then you can go a step forward and you can try different things. And he said that for many young people, young guitar luthiers, it's very difficult to stick to the rules. They want to try different things, sound port here or some very weird bracings and triple back and sides. And usually, as he said, it doesn't end well. So it's better to know the rules, how a traditional guitar is should be built. And then if you are happy with the result, then you can do a little step forward and you can do a little change, and then you can see how the sound is, how the guitar reacts.
I think that's true. Yeah. Yeah, I think it seems like that's where the artistry in what they do is happening, is that, oh God, what was I going to say? I think that if for them, they must view each iteration as a study, right?
Yeah.
And with my guitar, this was Walter's study of the 1937 Hauser, which I'm in New York, so that's fun for me. That's a story for my audiences, right? I can throw that out there. We know that you know, every guitar maker has something based on that Hauser, but they don't. And so that's a lot of fun. And sort of be able to tell people, oh, it's right over there. It's right in the Met right there. But understanding each luthier's work as being there, it's a study. And we know, as I know as a composer, that every piece is sort of a study, a little bit of a, and I talked to Dale Kavanaugh, your teacher's wife, about this same thing. It's like, just sort of like each one is sort of like you're challenging yourself in a new way. But as we get older, we realize that those challenges have to be very incremental, right? Mm. They can't just be, I'm going to write a symphony. Like, I'm not going to write a symphony. That's not going to happen. Maybe I'll write a piece for two violins, you know, and see how that goes, something like that. Yeah. So, you know, it's, I think that, yeah, sort of viewing these all as studies and then through that, that's what a lot of works of art are. You know, a lot of paintings are sort of like, I wanted to play with this color palette or with these shapes or with this subject matter. So, yeah, I mean, just sort of respecting the luthier, right, is such a big part of what we all do when we interact with their instruments.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you're studying classical guitar and you are in the first year of studying at a university, you still have to play some etudes by Carcassi or Zohr, even if it's easy to play. But you
We had to start over. We all had to, in Texas, I went to Adam Holzman's school over there. We had to completely start over. So like, yeah, Carcassi, all those things. Go ahead. I'm sorry, but yeah, keep
I
going.
mean, if you want to play, okay, I just take myself as an example. I think I was in the first year of the studying, and I wanted to play Capriccio Diabolico by Tedesco. I mean, it's a very difficult piece with some. I mean, Tedesco was a pianist, so he composed probably the this piece on a piano, and it should be played on guitar. And I mean, I was very motivated to learn that piece, but at some point I realized, okay, calm down and play or practice, first of all, some Carcassi etudes or Zohr or Brauer. And then you can, if you have that base, then you can do a step forward and play more difficult pieces. And I think it's also a little bit similar to guitar making. So you have to go through a process before you do something crazy or innovative, let's say.
Yeah, I think that's true. Kind of moving on to your role with Sick Ass, as you know, obviously you love these instruments, and that's got to be at the core of why you do what you do. You like the instruments, you like working with the luthiers, and like you said, you're not in sales. But you are sort of spearheading what is one of the definitive online presences of any guitar company. I think they were doing a really good job in Los Angeles, you know, and then you guys came along and you humanized the process by being present in the room with the players and the performers, by allowing yourself to be on camera. And that sort of took what they were doing at GSI and I think evolved what they were doing into something that is more personal. Like you said, same with this show. It's nothing I ever want to take too seriously, because then I just won't want to do it. With content creation, though, there is certainly so much work, planning, focus that goes into what and how you're doing it. There's no way to look at what you guys are doing and not think like, okay, there's some strategies here, right? Who you're presenting, how you're presenting them. What are some of the things that you guys talk about when you're talking about who you're gonna, feature this week? You know, with sort of one of the earlier definitive ones would be the Anna Vidovic, right? Would be sort of like one of the big first sort of defining the brand in a way. A great guitarist, and someone who is very comfortable on camera, you know, stuff like that. But what are you guys going for, and what do you see the evolution of your brand being? Because obviously, just like with everything, just like a luthier, what you guys are doing, you aren't going to want to sit there and just do the same thing over and over and over again. It'll lose its sparkle. So, you know, let's just go a little bit into the genesis of the brand, where you see the brand now, and where you see, hopefully, if you guys have discussed any ideas about where it's going to go in the future.
Yeah, I mean, so when we started the YouTube channel of Zikas, of course, at that time I wasn't there. I'm doing the content creation now for 3 years, but the YouTube channel exists actually since I think 8 or 9 years. And we started with very, let's say, bad videos in terms of quality of and the sound. And at some point, we thought, okay, if we want to reach more audience, if we want to do what we are doing better, we have to increase the quality and also the performance of the artists. And at some point, we got in touch with Anna Vidovic, and we organized a concert in the near of Karlsruhe. Karlsruhe is the city where Zikas is located. And so we needed a big name, a very good classical guitarist to to draw the attention of the audience to us. And Anna Vidovich was just incredible. I think her performance, one of his her videos has, I think, 40 million clicks. This is incredible. And so it was a very good start for the channel. And yeah, then we started to invite different artists. Of course, we couldn't invite every week Anna Vidovich to Zikas. And but we had always let's say a standard in our mind, performance-wise, and we started to look around. Okay, who are good guitarists? Where are good guitarists that are in the near of Karlsruhe? And as you know, in Germany we have a lot of music universities at a very good level, and so we started to contact the students, the guitar students, and they came to Zikas, and we started to record single videos, and we kept it moving, and we improved the cameras, the microphones through the years, and yeah, now we have actually a very good studio, very good cameras and microphones. So actually, we always so a goal that we had was to keep the quality always improving and not to stay where we are in terms of quality. But at some point, now I'm getting to your point,
Well,
we don't want
before
to.
we get to the next point, is this is really interesting. What I've latched onto is the fact that you guys almost did a recruitment, like a sports team. Like you'd go into a university and you'd find these kids, and then some of them grow up to be Alexandra Whittingham. You know what I mean? Is that fair? Is that kind of what happened there? Or like you see them, you go like, send us whatever good guitarists you think are good, and then some of them are, some of them move on to do other things, and then some of them stick around and become, like the next, iteration of maybe an Anna Vidovich, which, I wouldn't say that. That's not fair to Alexandra, and that's not fair to Anna. But it's, I think that there is a sort of sense that's an interesting model. Is that you're going in there and you're getting the people who, and this isn't, who are hungry and need those videos for their careers. And then once they're there, they have a conduit to sort of express themselves through you guys. And you guys also have these great guitarists playing your guitars and helping you maintain your business. It's an amazing model, and it's very innovative.
Actually, it is. And yeah, of course, as you said, it's also a very good possibility or opportunity for us to present the guitars that we want to sell. And that's why the artists who come to Zikas and record have to be at a very good level, and the guitar should sound good. And this is also not that easy for me, because sometimes I have to, in some way, say to people, it's not good enough how you're playing to come to Zikas and to record. And that's the reality. And they can take it actually in a positive way. They can improve themselves and come again. And our door is always open for every artist.
I'll tell you, that happened to me with Dennis. Is I had this guy Damien performed one of my pieces, and it was picked up by Sick Ass. And so I was like, wait a second, I love Damien, but what about, hey, I'll play for you. So I got something of me in an office playing, and it was okay, it was cute. But Dennis wrote back, he's like, hey, your playing's great, but just like, we need a little bit more. So then the next sort of pro level thing that I did in New York with a really good guy named Rob Alder, who's over here. We did something, and then I said, "How about this?" And he goes, "Yeah, that'll work." So then I was presented. But you really can't. It's more like a challenge that you should be up for, kids. You know what I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Don't take it offensively. Take it as a stepping stone, you know?
exactly.
Yeah.
So this is, yeah, this is this was the Zika's media program, what you were talking about.
Yes.
And yeah, so we have the Zika's media that people send us their pre-recorded videos, and if the quality and the performance is good enough, we publish it on our YouTube channel. And the other way to be presented on our channel is to come to Zika's, to our studio, and we record. And this is, of course, much more work for us, or for
Yeah.
me, because I'm recording the artists and editing and all that stuff by myself. And we have to be sure that it's going to pay out at the end, if you are recording an artist, because it will take a whole day and a few days of editing, publishing, and if it doesn't bring views because of the performance, then we have worked actually for nothing, and
Yeah.
it's not good. So that's why we have to be very picky. And sometimes, as I said, it's difficult for me
To say no. Yeah.
to say no.
It's
Yeah,
it's
but
sad. Yeah.
Especially at the beginning when I started at Zika's, I needed 1 hour to write an email to say no. But
Yeah.
now I'm thinking, I don't have the time. I just say, I'm sorry. It's a great performance, but the video should be better. And you're welcome to send us a new video next time. Or the video is great, but the performance is still not good enough. You can try to improve, and you can send us a new video next time. And yeah, so, but we are actually also looking for different contents, new contents. As you said, we don't want to stay where we are. I mean, it's very comfortable now because everything is working very well. And actually, we still don't know what we want to do. We are still asking each other, we are thinking, we are mind mapping, and so we are sometimes trying new stuff. For example, the weekly guitar meeting is now, I think we have it for 1.5 year or 1 year. It's actually new. So, and it's a very good way to connect to the people again, and to get more personal. And we are also thinking about some live streaming stuff, but we still don't know how. And we were thinking about doing the weekly guitar meeting live, like live with live chat, and the people say, "Ah, can you play that part again? Can we listen to the other guitar again?" And that I could maybe that I can switch the guitars and get even more close to the people, but it's not easy. I mean,
No, none of this is easy. I mean, no, I mean, this what I'm doing is relatively easy, but what you're doing is, I mean, it's a video editing is just it's a mess. So the idea of doing it live would maybe save you some time with the editing, because
Actually,
editing sucks.
I would say the editing. Yeah, right. And yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm also doing some behind the scenes stuff. I mean, it's like more bloopers if artists are recording, because they are not playing in one take. They need three, four takes, and then I mark the some places in the scores, and we record that parts again. And at the end, I can also create a very funny video of the recording. And so that also our audience on YouTube can see that these people are not robots. They are also making mistakes during the recording, and what you are seeing at the end is a nearly perfect recording, but it's a work. It's a lot of work behind that. And yeah, so creating some behind the scenes and bloopers stuff is also very fun. It's a fun content. And we have sometimes tutorials also. And we started now with, it's actually a tutorial. We have Caroline Langendijk. She's writing an arrangement of a famous piece like Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson, and she's recording the tutorial in the studio. So she will play through the whole piece, and then she will play all the whole piece in half tempo and with the scores on the screen. So this is actually a new content that we
Good.
thought could be interesting for people. It could help people a lot to learn new pieces, and the arrangements are original by Caroline Langendijk. And so this is one of the new contents, and we are still thinking about new stuff. But
That right there is sort of like
yeah.
that's an evolution, or that's at least new content, new ideas that you build on top of it. It's incredible. That's a great idea. Yeah, having the streams. Now you're getting into the educational aspect of it.
Exactly. We want to add the education aspect to the channel.
And you're
And
talking about joking and bloopers and stuff like that. And that's super important that people feel connected to these players and not separated from them, because it's such a small world that it is very, we are all sort of dependent on at least feeling connected to other guitarists, you know, and it is important for the viewers to sort of feel like they're in the room with you. And you guys have achieved that, I think, in most, if not all ways. So thank you for all
Yeah,
that work that you and
happy to
Sikes
hear
have
you.
done, Juyan. It was an absolute pleasure having you on. And
Thank you very much. Thanks for asking.
That does it for my time with Juyan Terzaban. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you guys next time. Make sure you go to Savage Classical. That's SAVAGE classical.com. SavageClassical.com. And go to BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. That's BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support to support the show. You can get your material on there if you want. Give me a call at Brett@BrettWilliamsMusic.com. BrettWilliamsMusic.com/support. I will see you guys next time.